calling 911 when in an accident may just not be enough. Car accident, remember. After 911, call 411. 1-800-411-PAIN. 1-800-411-PAIN is a legal and medical referral service. Non-employee spokesperson.
Check out The Ticket on Facebook. Like us at 790 The Ticket. We've got breaking news, behind-the-scenes videos, pictures, articles, and sometimes our thoughts on things. Like us, 790 The Ticket on Facebook. But what do we do without Facebook? MySpace, right? I never had a MySpace page. But Facebook's only about 13 years old. Think about where it is. You know, Mark Zuckerberg, he could almost buy, like, you know, half the NFL.
And didn't Belichick butcher the name? Did he call it my Snap?
No, he used something Snapface and something. Snapface.
That was it.
And he butchered Instagram or something. I don't know. InstaChat and Snapface or something. He completely butchered it.
Yes. Yes. Love it.
786-360-0790 is the number. Go back to the phones. Victor is in Miami. Good evening, Victor. Welcome to The Ticket.
Hi. How are you guys?
What's up?
I was on my way home, and I was tuning in, and you were asking what I think I would do differently, and Riley's the man. I have a lot of respect for him. He's made a lot of great moves for our young organization. But the Bam pick, I think he's a great player, but I necessarily don't think he fits what we really need. We just, like, Bosch has been gone for a while, but he's officially, you know, that's it. We lost him, and I feel like the role that he played for us was a huge role. It's like a player that it's hard to find. It's a four that can stretch the floor real nice. And I feel like that's what we should have pursued harder. I think that's what we needed the most. And I think maybe we should have gone for maybe a forward in the draft, a small forward, not a power forward.
Okay, Barry, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think the natural question now is, are you a little too power rotation heavy with bigs? You know, should you have added another shooter instead? Now, Olynyk obviously can shoot for 7-footer. Adebayo's range at this point is about 15 feet. It's a work in progress. A scout for another team told me this week that his jumper does not look natural. He needs to work on the rotation of a shot. But the questions of this offseason will be this. Should you have drafted T.J. Leaf, the soft shooting forward from UCLA, right, instead of Adebayo? And should you have signed Rudy Gay, a career 19-point-a-game scorer, instead of Kelly Olynyk? We're going to know these answers in the next year, because it's going to be clear to us if the two players the Heat signed are better or worse than T.J. Leaf and Rudy Gay off a ruptured Achilles, who's now San Antonio bound.
You can educate us. I don't know how far, if talks got far with Rudy Gay or not, but did the Dolphins, did the Heat get a look at his medicals?
I don't believe they did. I was told in the last couple of days there was some level of interest, but not at the money that Rudy Gay was seeking, for a couple of reasons. One, the ruptured Achilles. Two, questions about whether he was a Heat culture type person. Third, perhaps not considered the toughest of players. So I think the Heat would have done it at their exception, at the 4.3, but he got more than that from San Antonio.
17-2.
Exactly right. Most fans, I would suspect, would have preferred Rudy Gay, but if you presented Rudy Gay and Kelly Olynyk to 30 NBA general managers, my sense is that more would have wanted Olynyk because he's a younger player, not coming off a major injury.
Woj, I guess, tweeted out 4 years for James Johnson with the Miami Heat. So that's breaking news right there. Let's see. Free agent James Johnson has agreed to the framework of a 4-year deal to stay with the Heat. League sources tell ESPN. So there
right,
you go.
Right. And I was texted a bit ago that the James Johnson deal is done. It would have to be at money in the range of 10 to 11.5 a year in order to have the space to be able to retain Wayne Ellington, as well as sign Kelly Olynyk tonight.
Well, usually I have my headlines written down. I'm just going to ad lib it right now with all this stuff going on. So, Barry, if I'm wrong, you correct me on the spot here. I won't take offense. Before we continue, let's go to headlines.
Here's what's trending now in Miami on The Ticket. WAXYAM South Miami and FM 104.3 HD2 Miramar.
The radio home of the Miami Heat.
All right, I'm doing this by memory, Barry. I have nothing written down. All right. A lot of things by Woj here, and Barry is confirming and reporting a lot of things as well. All right, what we know, there is a framework of a deal between James Johnson and the Heat for a 4-year deal that's going to be done. Kelly Olynyk agreed to a four-year, $50 million deal with the Heat. It looks like Wayne Ellington is probably going to be the casualty in all this. Amazingly, the Heat got Dallas to take the Josh McRoberts contract. The Heat are shipping McRoberts and a second-round pick to Dallas for center C.J. Ammons, a second-rounder out of Purdue. Boo. Huh? It's in talks. Has that been done yet?
Well, the Vertical's reporting the trade is going to happen, but nothing has been announced yet.
Well, it's a work in progress. How about that? If they can do that. And, boy, they're showing the Game 7 of the World Series here on Fox with the Marlins and Indians going back 20 years. So that's a deal in progress that hopefully will be done. That would free up $4 million for the Miami Heat. Rudy Gay, thought to maybe be coming to the Heat. He's going to the Spurs, 2 years, $17 million. Vince Carter, the 40-year-old. Vince Carter, a one-year, $8 million deal with the Sacramento Kings. Am I missing any other big deals that happened?
Those are the significant ones tonight. And, of course, the McRoberts deal is critical because that would allow you potentially to keep Wayne Ellington
if the
Heat chooses to guarantee his contract by tomorrow night's deadline. The Heat has to decide whether to guarantee his $6.3 million by 11:59 tomorrow night. The value of Ellington, obviously, is he gives you another quality shooter, and he would basically give you five quality guards again. You'd have Goran, you'd have Deion Waiters, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, and Ellington. That gives you depth in case you have an injury to one of your guards, and it also gives you the ability to play one of those five a lot at small forward, ideally Deion or Josh Richardson, which means you wouldn't necessarily have to force feed huge minutes to Winslow and Magruder if neither proves worthy of major minutes. Now, Winslow is obviously going to play some because he's a former high first-round pick. He can defend. He can rebound. Obviously, a good ball handler and has all the intangibles the Heat likes. But if Winslow's going to play more than 24 minutes a game, he's got to develop. Last year, 7 for 35 on threes. It was not a good gauge because he was battling injuries. That has to improve significantly.
Was it really awful shooting, or was it the wrist that he claimed hurt him from training camp on out and right out at the opening bell of the season? We'll find out.
Right. Don't you have to give him the benefit of the doubt just because that injury you would think would impact shooting, right?
Sure, absolutely.
If you have pain in your wrist.
Yeah, left wrist was the one that was hurt. Now, USA Today is reporting that in order to shed payroll to make the Marlins more attractive to potential buyers, a fire sale. Yep, there's that two-word expression, fire sale, is not only expected, but very imminent, according to Bob Nightingale of the Miami, of the USA Today. Now, the Herald's Clark Spencer is reporting that the team is heavily scouting five other teams' farm systems in preparation for possible deals. Now, heavily scouting is the key phrase there, because every team in baseball has scouts that scour the minor leagues. They have scouts that are assigned to certain clubs, and they scout all 29 other teams. So it's not like, oh, they're the ones that are, they're only scouting these five teams, but they're investing more in scouting these five teams than, say, the other 24. Now, on the field, the Marlins fell 4-3 to the Cardinals. Marcell Ozuna drove in all three runs, and he leads the major leagues now with 67 runs driven in. Miami opens up a three-game series tomorrow in San Francisco to wind up the schedule prior to next week's All-Star game, which will be held in Marlins Park, and those are your updates. 786-360-0790 is the number, and we were going to talk a lot about Lurie, but then this Heat news broke. But I would make that trade-off. I don't want to see another fire sale here. Someone said, by the way, that a fourth fire sale could be the Marlins trade with the Tigers, sending Miguel Cabrera and Dontrell Willis to Detroit for really parts. You know, it was Cameron Maben and Andrew Miller were the main ones that came back in that deal. It was a six-player deal, and neither lived up to the billing. Andrew Miller has had a renaissance as a relief pitcher, not so much this year, but the last few years he was invaluable as a reliever, just unbelievable. I mean, he really transformed himself from a busted starter to a four-year, $36 million contract as a reliever, getting 1 year left after this deal. Cameron Maben engineered a five-year, $25 million deal, a bit earlier in his career. I think he's still fulfilling that. But right now he is on Anaheim, and he's doing quite well, I believe, out there. But neither fulfilled their promise with the Miami Marlins. I don't call that a fire sale, sending Willis and Cabrera. That was one of those deals, kind of like the Josh Beckett to Boston deal. Fine, you want Josh Beckett, you have to take Mike Wall's contract, who at the time was really underperforming. If you want Miguel Cabrera, guess what? You got to take on Dontrelle Willis off our hands. You know, boy, that was a fall from grace. I mean, he rose up like a meteor and then fell almost as quickly. I mean, it was 2005. Barry, he led the majors with 22 wins and was second in Cy Young voting to Chris Carpenter.
Right. Well, the Cabrera trade will obviously end up being the worst in Marlins history. It's just incredible how the minute Andrew Miller left, certainly within a year, he became a good pitcher, and then he became a very good pitcher, has had success everywhere he has pitched for four American League teams since the trade. Now, obviously, he came up with Detroit, then traded to the Marlins. The Marlins trade him. He then became good. Sort of like what we're seeing with Brad Hand. Awful for the Marlins, traded to San Diego, now good. At some point, you have to wonder about player development, right? I mean, there has to be some Marlins accountability with that. By the way, a couple of interesting things on Kelly Olynyk.
Okay.
ESPN says, ESPN Stats and Information says he is the second seven-footer in history with 200 three-pointers and 400 assists in his first four NBA seasons. The other, Dirk Nowitzki. So he's in some very good company there with a future Hall of Famer. Someone from ESPN's Mike and Mike show tweets how ridiculous it is that Kelly Olynyk has $50 million in guaranteed money compared to $43 million for Julio Jones, the great receiver of the Atlanta Falcons. So we're seeing a lot of those NBA-NFL salary comparisons. And you know what? NBA salaries are always going to look better because there's more, there are fewer players to spend on, so the average salary is going to be higher.
I want to say the average salary in the NBA is it $5 million or something?
It's going to be more than that. Yeah, it's going to be going to end up being more than that as part of this huge cap increase that we've seen in the last couple of years. So I wonder Heat fans' reaction to Olynyk. Is it? It seems pretty measured. I don't know the level of enthusiasm. I'd be curious.
Let's take the temperature of the Miami Heat fans. 786-360-0790. How do you feel about Kelly Olynyk now becoming a member of the Miami Heat? 4 years, $50 million. If people want to call in, we've got several lines wide open. One of the things I want to talk to you also, Barry, is Chris Bosh. His jersey being retired. I'm going to sound like a cold jerk when I say this, but a factor in that had to be that blood clots ended his career. If he just simply retired, all right? I know he was part of four straight championship appearances, two straight championships, but if he just simply retired or was traded to another team, I don't think his jersey gets retired necessarily, at least not with the swiftness which appears to be done.
Right. Yeah, I think there's some sympathy as part of this. Now, at the same time, he is going to be in the Hall of Fame, and his accomplishments really shouldn't be understated. He helped two teams win championships, the rebound that he got leading to the Ray Allen three. The Heat obviously would have lost that series without him. So I think it's justified. I know Tim Healy, the Marlins writer for the Sun Sentinel, sort of mocked the fact the Heat's retiring his jersey, and then Healy was attacked on Twitter. But I think it's justified. You know, it's funny. Standards seem different depending on the sport and the team in retiring jerseys. The Dolphins traditionally have retired jerseys only of Hall of Famers. The Heat, of course, has done it for Dan Marino, who's a Hall of Famer,
ridiculous,
just not in their sport.
And Michael Jordan.
And Michael Jordan, right, a Hall of Famer, just not on their team.
That never made sense to me. Look, Michael Jordan, you can call him the greatest player of all time, and I'm not going to argue, but he's not Jackie Robinson, whose number is retired by every team. Robinson deserved it. You're retiring Michael Jordan's uniform? That never, ever, for even a nanosecond, made sense to me. I wholly disagree with the decision the Heat organization made on that one.
Well, the jerseys displayed are far less prominent than they once were in the arena for both Marino and Jordan.
Do you think there's buyer's remorse there?
I would have to think, certainly, for Marino.
If they could take them down, they would.
I would think so, right. It just seems like a decision that was really unnecessary looking back. I have no issue with Bosch's jersey being retired, but I do agree with you that sympathy certainly played a role. But it was nice to see them end on good terms, because there was some real rancor there at some point. But Bosch wished the Heat well. I know he and Mickey Arison have spoken in the last few months, and that's important because you don't want lingering anger between the two.
I'm glad it's being retired. It was an incredibly classy move, but I just think part of it is the way his career ended that factored into the decision. That's all I'm saying.
Right. I'm with you on that.
Now, someone says Marino's number is not retired. Can someone wear 13 on the Heat? I'm terrible at jersey numbers. There's not a worse person. I remember contracts and things like that. you know, how many years, how many dollars. For some reason, that part of the brain works. When it comes to jersey numbers, there might not be anybody worse than I am.
Santi actually just mentioned Mike Miller was number 13.
Okay, so it's not retired. It's just his jersey thing in the rafters. Fair enough. All right, so I stand corrected on that. Someone said, well, LeBron and Wade. Well, Wade, absolutely. Wade's not only going to have his number retired, he's going to have a statue eventually. I mean, they haven't announced that, but that's an absolute given. They're going to give Dwayne Wade a statue. LeBron, you know what? Yes, eventually everything will be smoothed over. Everything will be fine. And he and Riley will give a bro hug to each other, and his number will be up in the rafters.
And Shaq ended his Heat tenure on worse terms than LeBron ended his. I mean, Shaq forced his way out. He wanted to be gone, and that relationship was repaired. So there's no reason to think LeBron will be honored.
And he criticized Chris Quinn and Mike and Ron Culp, the trainer.
Right,
on the way out.
Right.
Ron Culp,
so
one of Heat's Riley's closest guys. By the way, someone said Adebayo is going to wear 13. Boy, when there I make go. A mistake, guess what? I really make a mistake.
Well, the Heat, I mean, they did announce the Heat several years ago they were retiring Marino's jersey. Now, it has been worn by other players, but the Heat did say we've retired the jersey. In this case, though, it apparently doesn't prohibit other players from wearing it.
Well, you remember a few years ago, the guy that was the first president of the Marlins was a guy named Carl Barger. They got him from Pittsburgh. He's the one that hired Dave Dombrowski to run the team. And in spring training one year, I think it was 93 maybe, Barger passed away in spring training of a heart attack. Now, they retired a number for Carl Barger. They retired number 5 because his favorite player was Joe DiMaggio, who wore number 5. And then flash forward a few years later, Marlins, where did they get Logan Morrison from? Did they trade for him? I'm trying to remember.
Where did Morrison come up through? Of course, he subsequently
been in
Tampa
crack
and
research
Seattle.
Then, yes.
I am going to look.
They might have drafted him.
I believe they might have. I will have your
answer. By the way, from the same community college that some guy named Pujols went to in Kansas.
Yeah, he began his career with the Marlins.
Okay, well, he came up, and he wanted to wear number 5, and so the Marlins decided to unretire, if you will, the number that they'd given President Carl Barger, so, you know, attributed to him. So numbers can be unretired.
Yes. Logan Morrison, 22nd round pick of the Marlins.
That's
back
right.
In 2005. But yes, I know some people were offended that a dead man's jersey would be unretired, but there was no association between Barger and Jeffrey Lurie. Obviously, that was the original owner, Wayne Huizenga.
Texter writes in, just tuned in. Any details on the James Johnson contract? All we know is that a framework of a deal has been agreed to, right? Is that a fair way to put it?
And it likely is going to be in the 10 to 11.5 million per year range because that's the money that the Heat had left after signing Kelly Olynyk, at least before the Josh McRoberts trade. That should open up space to keep Wayne Ellington potentially.
Should we give away free tickets for anybody that can spell Olynyk without Googling it?
Well, there is one consonant that appears twice.
That's right.
But that's all we'll tell you.
That's right. And I don't have anything to give away. All right, 786. What about Rudy Gay? Someone texts in. Rudy Gay agreed to a 2-year, $17 million deal with the Spurs.
And he did not want to go to that money with Rudy Gay because of concerns about ruptured Achilles and whether he'd be a good fit here. They were willing, I think, to offer mid-level exception type money, but not significantly more.
786-360-0790. Frank, and Adam, you hold on. Others, welcome to join. We're back after this. Come join us and the ticket promotions team for an all-star broadcast this Monday at Black Market in downtown Miami, just off Biz Kane. We're giving away a pair of all-star FanFest tickets every half hour. It begins at 4 p.m. There will be all-star specials and more. Black Market Miami, presented by Red Rabbit. It takes the Miami sports fan back to the 80s. Black Market, the future of the sports bar with the history of Miami. AM 790 and FM 104.3 HD2, the official radio partner of 2017 All-Star Week. If you haven't heard, the ticket, we're not going to pay that much money. The Heat have agreed to a 4-year, $50 million deal with Kelly Olynyk and have agreed to a framework of a deal with James Johnson, another 4-year contract there. It seems 4-year contracts are the norm. Yesterday was a 4-year, $52 million deal with Dion Waiters. Barry reporting that the James Johnson was probably in the $10 to $12 million range, somewhere in that neighborhood, right?
Yes, and that would give the Heat room to be able to keep Wayne Ellington if they want to by tomorrow night's 11:59 p.m. deadline. Basically, it's a very odd contract with Wayne Ellington where they had until the day after the signing moratorium to decide whether to keep him and guarantee his contract or not.
All right, that was Barry Jackson. And let's see, what else? And am I missing any other things right now? Any other? Let me go to Woj here. And I got two must follows. Are you and Woj? You guys are like phenomenal.
I'm honored to be in his in his company. He's the model for reporters. I guess Rudy Gay off to San Antonio. Right? 2 years, $17 million there with the Heat unwilling to match that money. I admire Riley for wanting to do something bold and not merely bring this team back. I'm just a little bit concerned about committing 4 years to basically a backup big, which is what Kelly Olynyk has been. Now he's skilled. He can shoot threes. Good passer. We saw Kelly Olynyk at his best in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals against Washington when he erupted his best offensive game of his career that Monday night to advance Boston to the Eastern Conference Finals. All that being said, he's basically a backup big. Do you invest 4 years and tie up your cap at $12 million plus a year for a backup big? I'm very, very mixed on this move.
Well, you said, and again, this pretty much handcuffs the Heat. When it comes to signing any kind of whales or big free agents in the next couple of years, they really have to, they don't have a shot at doing that, all right? They're capped out.
Right.
I went into a break, I forgot to bring it up last segment, with you saying, do you think that if Riley is forced, knows that he's got a, short of a major trade, that he's got to wait 3 years before he really can dive into the deep end of the free agent pool? Would this possibly lead to his departure from the team sooner than later if he's basically just got to sit on his hands?
Well, he signed a five-year extension recently, and he told us through the Heat's PR staff that even though his new deal allows him to spend more time at his home in Malibu, he has no intention of doing that. So the indication is Riley's going to serve out these 5 years, which would take him into his mid to late
70s. He's 72 now, so
right,
he's 77,
exactly.
I added a year to him earlier this week.
And then it'd be difficult to see him going beyond that because, frankly, why does he need the aggravation? But he loves what he's doing, so there's no indication he's going to step away. I would think, at the very least, he'd want a playoff team, you know, a team that is not barely eking into the playoffs, but a team that's a legitimate playoff team before he exits, right? I mean, doesn't everyone want to leave on a good note?
Sure.
I don't know that he has any realistic thoughts of winning a championship again here. I'm sure he probably hopes, you know, the hope of hopes that he'll be able to do it. Yeah. But there just doesn't seem like that, you know, would be in the cards with Golden State, the juggernaut that they are.
786-360-0790. And again, the Heat are trying to work out a deal with Dallas that would really be a salary dump of Josh McRoberts, sending McRoberts and a second rounder to Dallas for second year center CJ Ammons, right? A second year player out of Purdue. Boo. I'm an Indiana guy. That Purdue's our arch rival.
And you look back to that summer of losing LeBron, how you made commitments to Danny Granger and Josh McRoberts, thinking that and Shabazz Napier would entice LeBron to stay here. None of the three worked out. Granger's knees never healed. No. Got shipped off to Phoenix. Couldn't play
there. Is he out of the league now?
Out of the league now, yes.
We've got to cover. I enjoy talking to him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And a good player in his prime with Indiana, but his knees eventually gave out. And then McRoberts, you know what? You could understand the McRoberts signing at the time. 4 years, $22 million wasn't outrageous for a guy who was sixth among all power forwards and three-pointers. He had over 100 threes his last year in Charlotte, which is why he got the contract, but just could never stay healthy here. And he had one of the best lines of a Heat player the last 4 years. He said, people just see me as this big white guy who's hurt all the time. So he certainly had self-awareness. He just didn't have the genes necessary, right, to stay healthy.
Where's Napier now?
Shabazz Napier was in Portland and Orlando, so he has bounced around and really has not had much of an NBA career. Size, the issue there. Not a great defender, and his shooting percentages haven't been very high. He's now with the Blazers.
Okay. All right. 786-360-0790. Frank is in New Jersey. Good evening, Frank. Welcome to the Ticket.
Thanks, guys. You were asking what a Miami Heat fan thinks of Olynyk. I know you guys are talking, I think you're selling him way short. I think we've seen enough of him in the last 3 to 4 years. What he did in the playoffs this year, he's a 7-footer who can stretch the floor. He's tough. He can rebound, and he plays D. I think he's an upgrade to Reed, and he's probably everything we haven't gotten from McRoberts. I think he's a phenomenal pickup. And I'll add to that, look at what's happened to Boston now that Hayward's over there. They're having to get rid of all their toughness and all their defensive players just to make room, and I think that would have happened to us had we taken Hayward, and it would have depleted probably another 3 or 4 players that we really need. And lastly, we had the best record in the league for 3 months with the team that we have that Riley brought back. So I think it's a fantastic move by Riley.
How many wins?
All around.
How many wins he get this year?
How many wins did who?
How do you think the Heat eclipsed 50 wins?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
Okay.
No doubt there. As a matter of fact, I'll go out on a limb and I will tell you that we will be meeting the Cavs in the playoffs. And the reason I'll tell you that is I think if we had made the playoffs, we could have stuck with any one of the East teams, if not beaten. I think we could beat the Celtics. Well, we certainly can beat them now. But I think we could have beat them last year, and I think we could have stuck with anybody.
I asked this question of somebody else that was drinking a lot of Heat Kool-Aid, saying he could beat the Celtics. How do you figure? I know that the Celtics have to jettison some guys. They did Kelly Olynyk, who came down here. Yep. You know, they've got their shopping Marcus Smart, Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, et cetera. How do you feel the Heat have closed the gap on the Celtics?
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, the Celtics are going to get rid of I think Olynyk was one of the toughest guys they had. They're going to get rid of Avery Bradley, who was, in my opinion, their best defender. All they've got, and you saw what Isaiah Thomas was able to do against the Cavs when they guarded him. They've got a great scorer. IT is fantastic, but he's a shorter version of Allen Iverson. And as great as Allen Iverson was, how many championships did he win? I think IT is great, but I think with a long, athletic team like we're going to have, we bring in James Johnson back, Olynyk, how's he taking it to the hoop on us? A 5'9" guy. He's great. I think I'm a big fan, but he cannot take you past where he's taking you.
All right.
And you take away their defense and their toughness, I don't think they're as good as they were last year.
Okay. Thanks for the call. I'm just not drinking that much Heat Kool-Aid.
I'm not
that optimistic.
No. And Boston's top three of Hayward, Isaiah Thomas, and Horford.
Right.
Is, you know, I think many would say it's probably better than the Heat's top three of Whiteside and Gorin and Dion. And remember, Boston has two top five picks. I mean, with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who are going to be very good players.
Don't they have another pick of Brooklyn's also?
They do, right. Right. I was just talking about the players who are already on their roster.
Right, I know.
They're right, yeah, they have a future number one from Brooklyn as well. In fact, 7 first-round picks over the next 3 years. So I think most people would say Boston has the brighter future. Now, that's not to sell the Heat short. You know, they're a playoff team. They're probably going to be a 4th, 5th, or 6th seed. But Boston, on paper, has the better roster. Now, all that being said, that caller is right in the fact that they are going to miss something with Jay Crowder. They are going to miss Olynyk's toughness, his passing, obviously his three-point game. Not clear that they're going to have to necessarily move Avery Bradley. You know, one more thing on the Olynyk signing. It becomes clearer and clearer that the Heat has a model. You must have a toughness to your game in order to play here, right? I mean, we saw that with Waiters and Johnson. We're seeing that now with the Olynyk signing. This is not a place for soft players because this organization is going to get you in shape, and then they are going to expect you to stand up to any challenge. I mean, what? The quintessential Heat players over the years, obviously LeBron and Dwayne are the best Heat players in history, along with Shaq. But quintessential Heat players are the players with toughness, right? Udonis Haslam, Dan Majerle, Alonzo Mourning. And certainly Olynyk cannot be put with any of those yet. He just joined the team today. But he does fit into the theme of you needing to be a tough guy, not meek, to play here.
I agree. I mean, look at really what's Haslam done on on-court production in the last few years? Nothing. But he's an influence in the locker room and on the bench and just, you know, overall for that team. He sets a tone when it comes to toughness.
Right. And that's why he'll be back on the roster essentially as a player coach who will play sparingly. With a Olynyk signing, he might get 1 minute all year.
Yeah, and you know what? One day he's going to look up and see his number in the Raptors.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to Adam in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Adam. Welcome to the Ticket.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up?
I like the Olynyk deal. But, however, for maybe 7 to 8 mil a year, as you guys said, he's tough, he plays D, he can shoot, but I don't see him as a player getting more than 7 to 8 mil a year. And I see that he's probably getting 48 wins with a 50.
Well, you know what? Yeah, the expression is you're worth what somebody says you're worth. Guess what? Somebody felt he's worth $50 million a year, 12 and a half a year.
And he did get a lot of interest. I know Sacramento, Atlanta, Indiana were all interested. And by today's standards, he's probably a $12 million a year player. I mean, it would have been ridiculous to give him this contract 5 years ago before the cap spiked dramatically by over $30 million. But, you know, by today's economy, this is a contract that is market value for him. That being said, I agree with the caller. I would be a little reluctant for this team and this roster to have gone as high as they did.
But, you know, I'm reaching into another sport right now. But, you know, people say, how do you pay Tannehill $21 million? It's the cost of doing business.
Right. That's what quarterbacks cost to a decent NFL starting quarterback.
You know, you might see a player in basketball is overpaid, but that's just simply the cost of doing business, particularly if there's more than one suitor. Guess what? The price goes up.
Right. Right.
Let's go to Robert in Hollywood. Hello, Robert.
Hey, guys. Wanted to touch about the, well, just with Tannehill, that contract's looking way better now. I mean, year by year, you can't go wrong with that. So kudos to the Dolphins for that. But My thing is, if we're going to talk about Boston's recipe for success, isn't that what the Heat are trying to do, just build off of guys that are like names but not big names? Because, I mean, Isaiah Thomas was a big name. Al Horford, you could say, was a big name, but not, you know, his production was like, you know, more or less David Lee production. Why is it that the Heat fan just can't see that pretty much the Heat are trying to do the same thing as Boston? I mean, we can have enough pieces to do that and compete since we have the runner-up coach of the year. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Brad Miller, fine. You know, it's whatever. But, you know, I mean, we do have the coaching. And who says we can't be in the Eastern Conference Finals? You know what I mean? Like, if we just do what they do and we have the same amount of talent as them and we've shown it last season, why can't the Heat fan just can't see the positive side and the glass half full on that?
Well, I wouldn't rule it out, but at the same time, you're clearly underdogs to Boston. Obviously, you're underdogs to Cleveland as well. So, to me, it's a stretch to think Eastern Finals. I would say, you know, a good goal would be second round of the playoffs. To get the second round of the playoffs, you have to beat Washington or Toronto. You'd be an underdog in both series, barring injuries, but I don't think it's out of the question that the Heat could rise to a third or fourth seed. Are they that much worse a roster than Toronto or Washington? No. I'd give the other teams a little bit of an edge at this point, but you're not as good as Boston on paper.
786-360-0790 is the number. He's Barry Jackson. I am Frito. We will take you until 10 o'clock. We'll be back after this for one final segment.
The world is a vampire. Sent to drain. Secret destroyers. Hold you up.
Anna Jarn Levine reminds you the football season is coming, and the Ticket has you covered from training camp, which starts at the end of this month through the regular season and Super Bowl. Anna Jarn Levine, accident attorneys, call 1-800-747-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. Football, hear it on AM 790 and FM 104.3 HD2, the Ticket. Barry Jackson and I will take you up until just before 10 o'clock. They're showing Game 7 of the 97 World Series on Fox Sports Florida. God, 20 years. Aren't the 97 team going to have some kind of reunion?
Oh, yeah. A bunch of players there serving in various roles. Moises Alou. Al Leiter is going to be involved. Louis Castillo. A bunch of 97 and 2003 Marlins are going to be here for All-Star Weekend.
Ah, that's cool. That'll be a lot of fun. Are you looking forward to any part of that more than other? I mean, I've never really been a big home run derby person on TV, but I think seeing Aaron Judge and seeing Stanton just hit those in person, those might, you know, engender some oohs and ahs.
Yeah, I think so, too. I talked to Joe Buck this week, who's going to call the game for Fox. He said Major League Baseball's All-Star game, without question, the best All-Star game, said it shouldn't even be in discussion. I was asking him about South Florida's baseball market. He insists that it is a good market if a team is winning. Now, you and I have debated this. Even if a team is winning, will this stadium fill 30,000 people? I'm skeptical. I think the ceiling probably may be averaging 25, 26,000. They're at around 20,000 this year as usual. And that's just tickets distributed or sold. That's not actual people in the seats.
If you get a really popular owner, then maybe, you know, you'd have to have someone really likable, or at least an owner that makes smart decisions, puts the right people in charge, drafts well, develops well, you know, dips his toes into the free agent market when necessary, but, you know, gets a consistent winner, and we haven't seen that. I mean, they were a wild card team in 97 and 2003. They won the World Series in both years. How many winning seasons have they had? Not many.
They've been remarkably inconsistent. One or two?
Yeah, maybe.
And, you know, the 2 weeks after the All-Star break are going to be fascinating to see if they dismantle this roster. I know Clark Spencer, my colleague, and I each talked to someone with the Marlins today. The sense we get is that virtually everybody is available. Now, obviously, there'd be more interest in moving a Phelps or a Ramos or a Prado than there would be a Yelich or an Ozuna, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that stands to reason. But they will listen on everybody, including Stanton. Does that mean there's going to be a fire sale? I don't know that I would go that far, but they are eager to get rid of money. They're not going to give players away and get nothing back, but there's a willingness really to consider a trade for anybody on the roster. I think most likely to stay would be Real Muto because they have no catcher in their system. Thomas Talese is not an option.
He's not arbitration eligible yet, Real Muto.
Right, exactly. So he's cheap and he's a quality player. So I think he'd be the most likely to stay. And JT Riddle is a cheap shortstop who's going to cost him nothing for the next 4 years.
Right. Guys that aren't even arbitration eligible, you might as well just keep them. And, you know,
right. And Bohr, I don't know why there'd be any incentive to trade Bohr because he's going to be very affordable. You have control on him for actually through 2020. Now, the Yankees are interested in Justin Bohr, but I would think they'd have to give the Marlins back something very enticing to give up a player who's under team control for another 4 years and very affordable.
Well, Bob Nightingale, the baseball writer for USA Today, said that Martin Prado might be in play for both the Red Sox and the Yankees. They're sort of an AFC East battle for him.
Right, right. And someone who's close to Prado said that actually he's braced
AFC,
for a trade.
I'm sorry, AL East.
AL or AFC, both.
Right.
I think Prado is braced for a trade. That was a contract that they probably shouldn't have given him last offseason, but the Marlins really liked his leadership. So he would be at the top of a list of guys likely to be moved along with Tom Kohler, David Phelps, and A.J. Ramos.
What does it do to the Marlins' asking price? I mean, I want to get this straight. The New York Post reported that one of the big groups in the running for the Marlins, led by Tag Romney and the big money guy behind it, was this guy Wayne Rothbaum, a gazillionaire that nobody outside the financial industry has ever heard of. They're out. They just didn't want to go as high as Lurie wanted them to go.
Right. I know that they offered $1.1 billion. The Marlins rejected that offer, as I reported last week. And the Marlins had hoped that they would continue to engage them in negotiations. Maybe they could get them to go up a little bit. Apparently, they're not interested in going up, and they've walked away, at least according to the New York Post report that we have not independently confirmed. My colleagues and I, Doug Hanks and Clark Spencer, spoke to a couple of people who've been involved in the group. Tonight, they have said they're not aware of Rothbaum and Romney pulling the plug yet. But what we do know, which was clear last week, is that they are not willing to meet Loria's asking price of $1.2 billion, which, by the way, is less than the $1.3 that he originally asked for that nobody was going to pay.
Yeah, I mean, and if he lowers it even further, I guess he could. What, he's already ordered $100 million, but, you know, again, under the axiom, you're worth what somebody says you're worth. If nobody's going to pay $1.2 billion, guess what? Either he holds on to the club, which I don't think he wants to do, or he's got to realize he's got to lower the asking price even further.
Right, right. And the Marlins have said privately for months the team will be sold. But yesterday was the first time that they have said it on the record unequivocally. In Bob Nightingale's USA Today piece, David Sampson said this team will be sold. I don't understand why anyone would pay $1 billion for this team, knowing they have the worst TV contract in baseball, attendance, bottom three in baseball. Their stadium revenues are much less than they thought when they opened this place. So it's baffling to me why smart people would want to get involved with this team.
Well, I just lost my train of thought here. I don't know. I can't remember what I was going to say.
No, that's fine. It's just now people who've looked at the Marlins books say they're not lying when they say they're losing a ton of money. I know projections this year have been $60 million in losses because the payroll is the highest it's ever been at $115 million. They make only about $20 million from local TV money a year, which is the lowest in baseball.
Right.
So this market with this attendance and this TV contract simply cannot afford a payroll over $100 million. That's the sad truth of it. Now, if you get a TV contract worth three times what they have now, then sure, they can have a $100 million payroll. But to make the math work here is just so challenging. And that's why I don't have much hope for this franchise, no matter who owns it.
And they just we just found out they extended recently, I'm not sure when, several executives. And Mike Hill, Bob Nightingale reported a five-year deal worth in excess of $10 million.
Right. Loria wants to take care of several of his close confidants, his top executives before he leaves. So the new owner will be responsible for paying all these salaries. Even if he doesn't want Michael Hill, he's going to have to pay him $2 million a year over the next four.
786-360-0790. We have several lines open right now. Is there anything differently that you would do if you were Pat Riley? I mean, I know you've been dubious, marginally dubious of this Olynyk signing. Is there anybody you would have gone after that he didn't? Or you know, any decision that you would have differed on?
Not really. I know that he really wasn't all that enthralled with Ibaka or with Gallinari, two guys that they missed out on while waiting on Hayward. I think there would have been a pursuit of Blake Griffin, but he was off the board last Friday night while we were doing a 20-and-a-half-hour radio show. As far as what was left in free agency, it was not a good group. You know, last couple of days, I mean, the best names on the board were essentially Olynyk, who was supposed to be restricted, but then the Celtics had to renounce him to make room for Hayward. Rudy Gay, but after that, it's really a bad list of names available. The top guys beyond those two would have been Ersan Ilyasova, Thabo Sefolosha, CJ Miles. So with what was left, the Heat did as well as they could possibly do. I think most executives would say that Olynyk was one of the top two players left on free agency as of yesterday, and they got him. And as a result, they're going to have a very good power rotation. The question is, will they have enough shooting? And that hinges in part on whether Justice Winslow develops his range.
786-360-0790 is the number. By the way, you know, the leagues in baseball, the fans vote on the one final player to add each roster. Justin Turner, third baseman for the Dodgers, and Mike Moustakas, who plays for the Royals. Those have won those fifth-man competitions. My boy Chris Bryant for the Cubs. I was hoping to get down here so I could interview with him. Guess what? He's not part of that.
At least the Marlins will have a presence more than the one minimum required player, right? Won't just be Ozuna. We'll have Stanton in the game, and we'll have Boer in the home run contest on Monday night.
I hate that rule. Now, I hate it a little less because, you know, I couldn't stand the rule requiring at least one player from every team. I thought it was antiquated. I didn't like it when this game had consequences. The winning league has home field advantage in the World Series. I thought that was terrible. I thought just leave that to... You know, just that's just wrong to do it that way. How about the team with the best record? And I was just offended. Like, you want the teams to feel the best team, but then you've got to have one player for each team. That made no sense. If there's one player from San Diego, that suddenly the ratings in San Diego are going to just go appreciably up because, you know, one bum of a player from that team is on the All-Star game?
Wow. If I told you a year and a half ago that Brad Hand would be at the All-Star game at Marlins Park, you'd ask me what I was smoking.
Exactly. And a few years ago, remember Mark Redman, R-E-D-M-A-N, he pitched for the Marlins.
A lefty.
That's right. He later went to Kansas City. He was Kansas City's lone representative. They needed somebody. Barry, he had an ERA of 5.86. Like, really? That's an all-star? You got to be bleeping kidding me.
Yeah. Well, every team, they feel like every team should have someone so that there's interest in those markets to watch the game, right?
Do you think that, okay, is Brad Hand coming on the team? Is he on the team?
Yeah.
Okay, do you honestly think, and I'm not picking on you, I don't even think I am, I'm just playing, you know, devil's advocate. Does anybody really think that San Diego fans are going to clamor in to see a middle reliever, you know, or maybe an eight-inning guy in Brad Hand? Like, really? That's what you're going after?
Yeah,
that's what you're going to.
It's absurd.
Oh, let's not go out tonight. Let's not go out drinking. Let's not do this because Brad Hand might get in the middle innings.
Well, I think that's partly a function of the Padres not being very good for years, so he was the best option because he had to put one on there.
786-360-0790 is the number. Who was the player that I said for Oklahoma City? Andre Roberson, right?
Exactly. Very good defensive player who can't shoot free throws.
He was someplace recently. I've got to look at an USA Today. It was a $487 bill, and he left a $13 tip. And the waiter, or maybe the bartender, put the, you know, the receipt on, I might have been Instagram, might have been Twitter, on social media, to show it and to show the name and the signature and everything, and the $13 tip. Well, he tweeted back, and he wrote, I guess it wasn't like tons of drinking. It was one bottle that cost that much money, and he ordered it, and with just one bottle, he said in his tweet, you brought that from there to here. That's it. I handled the bottle the rest of the time. It got me to thinking, how I like tipping bartenders. I do it. I tend to do it a lot. But do we need 20% for a bartender when he just brings it like a couple of feet?
Right. And you raised the question of going to a place for takeout, not delivery.
Yeah.
But takeout.
If you get takeout food and they bring it from there to here.
Listen, as somebody that worked in the restaurant business.
People, two steps. How much of a tip do you deserve? Well, buffets, I think you do leave a tip because they're clearing your table.
Right.
So that's certainly the right thing to do, even though they're not actually bringing you food.
But you have to realize that you're not paying these guys normal wages. These guys will work for like $2 an hour or something like that. They're basically getting zero money on their paychecks. So all of their money is generated by tips. So when you tip them poorly, it's not like they can make it up somewhere else, or we figure, oh, well, they didn't do a whole lot. That's all of their income, basically.
So why am I tipping, though, on takeout when that, you know, the person brought it, okay, from there 3 feet away, and they handed it to me?
Takeout, you're usually making pretty close to minimum wage, maybe just a little bit more.
This sounds like someone who's been in the restaurant business.
Yeah, I worked at Chili's for a number of years, actually, and I've done takeout, and I've been a waiter. I've done a bartending. I've done it all. And, yeah, takeout, it's not as big of a deal because they're actually making an okay hourly wage.
Right.
But the servers and the bartenders, they make nothing. Like, you have to tip them no matter what.
I used to like drinking a lot. I never had a problem or anything. I'm just saying I used to enjoy going to, you know, bars, have my shots of Southern Comfort. And, you know, with the surgery now, I rarely ever drink. But I always took care of the bartenders. I figure if I take care of the bartenders first, they'll take care of me. And so tip your bartenders early and often, and I think you'll end up doing well at the end.
So where are tips not needed, right? Is there any scenario where you should not tip? Because it's the right thing to do, obviously, generally.
I was in a restaurant once, actually at Red Lobster. The service was so bad, and I complained throughout dinner how bad it was. This was an ongoing complaint. It was just terrible. And I didn't want the guy to think that I forgot to leave a tip, so I left a buck. And normally I'm a 20 to 25% guy, but I wanted to make a point that this was bad. We recently had a recent trip to Baltimore for my nephew's wedding, and we went to a restaurant in Baltimore at the Inner Harbor. Worst service I've ever had. I mean, just, you know, I ordered a glass of water, and the guy wasn't particularly busy. It took him 30 minutes to bring that, you know. Wow. And then that was just the least of his problems. He was incompetent. He was terrible. And again, I like tipping big. I do. I think it's only fair to do. I left nothing. I left $4 on an $80 tab or something.
Which gets the message across that your service
was substandard. You know, 5% tip.
Right, right.
And I wanted to show him that what you did was awful. It was beyond bad.
Yeah. Well, there's a former Miami Heat player. I'm not going to name him, but a former Miami Heat player of prominence who left a very poor tip at a restaurant. And word gets around on that. And I know a couple of people who were not sports fans had heard this story. They shared it with me. And that completely affected their perception of this player, who, by the way, was a popular player here. Now, I can't confirm the story, so I'm certainly not going to besmirch the guy. But that affects perception of athletes, right? If an athlete worth several million or hundreds of millions leaves a tip that's completely insufficient, do you not think less of that person?
I would think a little. All right, let me ask you this. When you tip, do you do the amount before the tax is added? I think that's only fair. Yeah, Grant's looking
right
at me as a guy.
It's based on pre-tax from all that we've been told over the years, right?
It is absolutely based on pre-tax. However, I never do it because it's always easier to just look at the big number and figure out 20% from there.
I do the math very quickly in my head.
Same
I've always
here.
Been good with math. But now you'll see on bills, it says at the bottom, 15% is this amount, 18% is this amount, 20% is this amount. And it gives you the figures at the bottom.
You know what? I've noticed that, and also noticed that it's wrong a lot.
Well, no. You know why you think it's wrong?
Why is that?
Because most places, not all, and I checked this, do it before the tax. So you're looking at the bottom figure with the tax, and you're like, wait a minute, that 20% isn't right. Do it before the tax, and you'll see those figures are correct.
That could be what it is, because I've absolutely looked at it, and I'm like, well, I would have given you more money if you hadn't pre-wrote this tip on there that I'm supposed to give you. No, I'm going to give whatever you say now.
Yeah, so that's why I think you're looking at the wrong thing.
It's possible.
Yeah, that's why. So the restaurants that are, I applaud the ones that do it before you add in the tax. Why should I tip you more because Uncle Sam is charging me, you know, taking a bite out of my wallet.
It also annoys me when you have a large party and they give you like the 18% automatically included. Like, I tip 20% no matter where I go. It's like, if you want to just jip yourself on that possibility that I might not give you a full 18%, that's going to be your loss, because I'm not going to tip more than you predetermined.
Well, if you realize that they've already added 18 and if you want to tip more, there's nothing to preclude.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that if you're going to tell me how much I'm going to tip you, because naturally I'm going to tip you more than that anyways. But you decided that you're going to tell me how much I need to tip you now, so now I'm going to give you exactly what that amount is.
I haven't been to a food truck, fellas, in a long time. I guess you would tip that. Someone said, tip for takeout or a food truck. Well, the food truck people are making.
Yeah, there are food trucks at a couple of local parks here.
But
every
what if
week.
They're making your food? Does that count for something?
Well, sometimes they have a jar that you can put money in. Look, there's nothing wrong with putting on the bottom of your bill what the tip would be at various numbers, 15, 18, 20, even some at 22. The thing that I resent is when they include the tip and don't tell you, which a few high-end restaurants do. That to me is unacceptable. You know, tell you what it is if you want to leave whatever percent you want to leave, but don't include it. And try to fool you. It's like networks that tell you that our coverage for a game starts at 3:30. Yeah, your pregame starts at 3:30. The game starts at 4, right?
Well, it sounds like $7.90 the ticket.
Well,
we
I know
would
all
never
networks,
do that. What
all
do we
the networks
for
are guilty
games?
Of doing that, right?
We would never all do that.
So it sort of reminds me of that.
So we got less than minutes to go. Just overall, how would you grade the Heat thus far? They retained Johnson. They got a framework of deal. That deal is going to get done. Retained Waiters. Brought Olynyk into the fold and possibly shipped Josh McRoberts and his albatross of a contract to Dallas.
Yeah, I'd give him a B, which is raised because they were able to dump McRoberts. So basically, instead of what could have been James Johnson and Gordon Hayward, you get Dion Waiters, James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, and potentially tomorrow Wayne Ellington. That, to me, pretty fair trade. I'd rather have a door number one with Hayward, but door number two isn't half bad.
All right, we got to finish right now. Barry, you and I will be on tomorrow from 7 to 10. We'll hopefully have some breaking news then about Wayne Ellington. Grant and Santee, terrific job by you. Appreciate all the hard work you guys did. I'm Josh Friedman. Coming up next on The Ticket, ESPN Radio.